The Mercies by Kieran Millwood Hargrave, read by Jesse Buckley. By order of the King, if any sorcerer or faithful man had the sacrifice of God and his holy word and Christianity, and devoted himself to the devil, he should be cast down on fire and incineration. From Denmark, Norway, Trolltum, Sorcery Decree 1617, enacted Finnmark, 1620. Storm. Varda, Finnmark, northeastern Norway, 1617. Last night, Marn dreamt a whale beached itself on the rocks outside her house. She climbed down the cliff to its heaving body and rested her eye against its eye, wrapped her arms across the great stinking swell. There was nothing she could do for it but this. The men came scrambling down the black rock like dark, swift insects, glinting and hard-bodied with blades and scythes. They began to swing and cut before the whale was even dead. It bucking, and all of them grim and holding like nets tight about a shoal, her arms growing long and strong around it, so wide and fierce she held it, until she didn't know if she was a comfort or a menace and didn't care. Only watched its eye with her eye, not blinking. Eventually it stilled, its breath melting out as they hacked and sawed. She smelled the blubber burning in the lamps before it stopped moving, long before the bright roll of its eye beneath her eye wore down to dullness. She sank down into the rocks until she stood at the bottom of the sea. The night above was dark and moonless, stars scarring the surface. She drowned and came up from sleep gasping, smoke in her nostrils and at the dark back of her throat. The taste of burning fat caught under her tongue and would not be washed away. Chapter 1. The storm comes in like a finger snap. That's how they'll speak in the months and years after, when it stops being only an ache behind their eyes and a crushing at the base of their throats. When it finally fits into stories, even then, it doesn't tell how it actually was. There are ways words fall down. They give shape too easily, carelessly. And there was no grace, no ease to what Marn saw. That afternoon, the best sail is spread like a blanket across her lap, Mamma and Dina at its other corners. Their smaller, neater fingers are working smaller, neater stitches into the wind-wear tears, while she patches cloth over holes left by the mast fastenings. Beside the fire, there's a stack of white heather drying, cut and brought by her brother Eric from the low mountain on the mainland. Tomorrow, after, Mamma will give her 3 palmfuls for her pillow. She'll wrench it apart, stuff it earth and all into the casing, the honey scent almost sickening after months of only the stale smell of sleep and unwashed hair. She'll take it between her teeth and scream until her lungs wheeze with the sweet dirt tang of it. Now, something makes her look up and out towards the window. A bird, dark against dark, a sound. She stands to stretch, to watch the bay, flat grey and beyond it the open sea, tips of waves like smashed glass glittering. The boats are loosely pegged out against it by their 2 small lights, bow and aft, barely flickering. She imagines she can tell Papa and Eric's apart from the others, with its second best sail rigged tight to the mast. The jerk and stop-start of their rowing, their backs to the horizon where the sun skulks out of sight for a month now and for another month to come. The men will see the steady light from Vardo's curtainless houses, lost in their own sea of dim-lit land. They're already out beyond the Hunora stack, nearly at the place where the shoal was sighted earlier in the afternoon, worried into bright action by a